Gracious Father, as we reflect this morning on the events of that first Easter morning, the resurrection morning, help us to understand what we are reading and to know the significance of it. We ask for Jesus' sake. Amen. It was probably April 9, AD 30. It was definitely a Sunday. And the day began before dawn, which came at 6:17 a.m. The sky was still dark, but perhaps just beginning to lighten as some women headed off to a tomb to finish off burial rituals. Their master, who was welcomed into the city just a week before, was killed on fire, brutally put to death by the Roman soldiers. They had rushed his burial before the Sabbath on Friday evening. They would finish off their work and returns on with the rest of his followers. The story we read from John tells us of the first one, Mary Magdalene, one of several women who had followed Jesus in Galilee. Magdala is town in Galilee. Jesus had cast seven demons out of Mary. She supported his mission. She was there at the cross and his burial. The other gospel stories tell us about the other two. The second woman, also named Mary, was the mother of James the Younger and Joseph. I suspect she was Jesus' auntie, the sister-in-law of Jesus' own mother, married to Clopas, who was Joseph's brother. And all her auntie Mary, just to distinguish her. The third woman was Salome. Her husband was Zebedee. She was the mother of James and John, Jesus' disciples. So these women set out to put perfume and spices on Jesus' dead body, as was the custom at the time. Jesus' tomb was one that was cut into a stone, and it had a heavy stone cover in front of it. And as they went, they discussed, well, how are we going to move the stone? But when they got there, they saw the stone had already been rolled away. And Mary Magdalene went off to tell the other disciples, assuming someone had taken the corpse. The house is probably less than a kilometre away, and still being fairly dark, it's not as if they could do much else. So her immediate thought must have been, we'd better tell Peter and the others. So she rushed away to do that. Meanwhile, Auntie Mary is there, perhaps until it's light enough, so that they can actually have a look into the tomb. And when they do, they don't find Jesus' body. But there is an angel or two sitting there, and unsurprisingly, they are freaked out. And they bow down to the ground. In the Bible story, angels are not weak, fluffy, feathery creatures that you would sort of paint onto a Christmas card or an Easter card or anything like that. They are the messengers in the army of God. They are swift and powerful. The women are shocked. And the angel tells them, don't be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus Nazareth, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. The angel was there to tell them what had happened. It reminded them what Jesus told them before, that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and on the third day rise again. If you've been with us over the last few weeks, you'll have seen that multiple times in the stories and at the terms in the lead up to Easter. The angel reminds them what Jesus said, and it tells these women, go tell the other disciples, Jesus is risen, meet him in Galilee. It's another echo of what Jesus told the disciples before. Can you imagine? They didn't finish the burial rituals. Now they find this tomb empty and an angel just shows up to tell them Jesus is risen. Mark finishes his story of Jesus with these words, trembling and bewildered, as you would be, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. Now that's long. Mary Magdalene had already rushed off and reported to Peter and John what she had seen. We saw that in the story we read. At first, the disciples responded predictably with disbelief. I mean, their words sound like nonsense. But when all three eyewitnesses give their combined testimony to the 11, not only was the stone rolled away, all of them saw, but the tomb was empty, the body was gone, and an angel of God was saying, Jesus is risen, meet him in Galilee. Peter and John take them seriously enough to go and check it out. They race to the tomb, and John beats Peter there, and he bends over, but he only looks in. He sees the strips of linen used to unwrap Jesus' corpse. Peter arrives and rushes straight past John into the tomb and sees not only the strips of linen, but also their arrangement. The body of Jesus, gone. With Peter's arrival, John too enters the tomb, and his own account puts it very simply, he saw and believed. They were now just starting to understand Jesus' teaching that the scriptures said he must rise from the dead. Both men then returned to where they were staying, amazed, wondering to themselves about this extraordinary thing that had taken place. And yet, as they've gone out, they haven't noticed Mary Magdalene, or she's come back to the tomb and she is outside the tomb and she is crying. She's not sure what's happened. She still thinks someone has taken the body. And as she wept, she bent down and looked into the tomb and saw two angels seated where the body had been. Why are you crying? They asked. And she said, they've taken my Lord away and I don't know where they have put him. At that point, she must hear a noise behind her and she turns around. And Jesus is right there, and yet she doesn't recognize him. She thinks he's a gardener. And Jesus said simply, Mary. And suddenly she recognizes who it is. She falls to feet, so much to her, and tells her to, and he tells her to go back and tell the disciples. So Mary races back to tell the disciples that she too has seen the Lord. These are the events of that first Easter morning. And it was probably all over by what, about 8 a.m.? But that was the morning that changed the course of history forever. If not for those experiences, Christianity would never have existed. Jesus might have gained some recognition as a hard-done-by rabbi, but he would probably not be revered, let alone worshipped, all over the world. This morning I want us to see that we need to know that story. We need to know that resurrection story. The Bible presents a clear and consistent account of the events that morning, and when we read it, there's no doubt that they all point in the same direction. They differ a little in their perspectives, but they're all looking at the same thing. The tomb was empty. Jesus had risen from the dead. There is no doubt that this story is amazing. And so, of course, it's natural for people to think, that's just made up. That's just a legend. That's just a fairy tale. But if this story was fabricated, then why would the first witnesses have been women? I mean, at the time, their testimony was considered lightly compared to that of men. So if you're going to make up a story, make up men going to the tomb. And why, if the story was made up, why would they say that, you know, no one actually believed it at first? I mean, these Christians in the story, they don't look clever. They don't look like people who know what is going on. And later, most of these people died for believing that he really had risen from the dead. When people invent history, they tend to make it as believable as possible, to make themselves look good. But for the first Christians, this is an embarrassing story. Their master rises from the dead as he said he would, and no one expected it. And only a few women were first to see it, and the other disciples all said it was nonsense. Also, when people tend to make up a story, they tend to make sure that they've got all the exact same facts in place. You get together, you make your statement the same. Now, I present a humble story as I can, but in the different stories in the Bible, in the different Gospels, we get different details, and we can't simply reconcile them together. And that actually adds weight to the things that they agree on. Because it shows they haven't concluded. They haven't made everything just right. What we have is at least three different accounts of the same events that all differ slightly in their details. The main details, quickly, but a few of these side details, they're not quite as neat as we would like them to be. The story is consistent and it's embarrassing and it has independent witnesses. This is what true histories look like. And if Jesus did not rise from the dead, what are the main alternatives? Well, the first is that someone stole the body. If Jesus' enemies had stolen the body and they never claimed that they did, they couldn't have produced the body to put to bed the whole Christian movement. I mean, they're in the city where Jesus had been put to death. And a month later, explaining to thousands of people Jesus risen. But they didn't produce it. So perhaps the disciples suggested. But you have to wonder, how did they get past the guards at the tomb? How did they convincingly act so unexpected, that it was so unexpected even then? And why would they base their authority to preach on the fact that Jesus was raised, knowing that he was not? And why would they have risked their lives and may be killed for something they knew was just a fraud? And in fact, in both of those scenarios, you'd have to answer this question. Why did they unwrap the body? I've never done it, but I would imagine that sneaking through town carrying a dead body would be fairly hard. How does it help to carry around a naked dead body? Surely that just makes things sort of more obvious. No one stole the body. Alternatively, some people suggest that he was just unconscious on the cross and he revived later in the tomb. But I think that would actually be his belief. The Romans knew how to kill people. They knew how to make sure that they were dead, but somehow they made a mistake with Jesus and he removed the stone, which the women said they were going to have trouble moving. He overcame the soldiers and he vanished from history after a few meetings with his disciples, during which he convinced them that he was risen from the dead. Even the enemies of Jesus didn't try this line. The story is consistent. And it's embarrassing and it has independent witnesses. And the alternative stories, they don't offer a coherent picture of history. We need to know this story and we need to know it is true. And sure, it's true, but so what? Knowing it isn't enough. We need to actually understand it. We need to know the significance of what it means. I touched on some of these in the last edition of The Rag, if you saw it. But these are really big. I'm just going to mention a few of them. I'm going to sort of reel them off quite quickly. Firstly, it means that Jesus accurately predicted what would happen to him. The resurrection supports the idea Jesus was a trustworthy prophet. That's the one. With this, the resurrection enables Jesus to be the Christ, the promised leader of God's people. He can't be if he's dead. Here's a more complex one, that his resurrection shows that his sacrificial death was successful. He gave his life to bring forgiveness and God raised him from the dead. And related to that, his resurrection has made the sacrifice for sin. He can ascend to the Father to represent us before God. He said it to Mary, I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. Because Jesus rose from the dead, there is a human, a body, a man like me, like you, before God right now. And he is there for you and he's there for me because he rose from the dead. And finally, Jesus' resurrection means that death is defeated. Like the kings in time of old charged the battle and vanquished the enemy, Jesus did that with death. He took all it had to offer. And unlike the stories of people who've escaped death, or people who've been resurrected sometime after death, Jesus didn't live to die again. No, Jesus didn't go into death and come back out. He went into death and broke through the other side. He broke through death completely. And the way we understand it is by remembering that Jesus said all of this would happen according to the scriptures. That's how we're going to understand those things. That Jesus said it would happen according to the scriptures. In verse 9 of John chapter 20, it says this: they still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. They didn't know their Old Testament well enough. And I think that's something probably a lot of Christians are in the same boat. And that's okay. I'm going to put a pin in it for now, but we'll come back to it next week as we consider the risen Lord in the old promises fulfilled. We need to understand why Jesus rose. We understand what it means. But it's not some cold intellectual fact that we need to know. Jesus rose, and it means these things. I'm a robot. No. When Mary understands that Jesus has risen, she doesn't just sort of nod her head. You know, oh, very good. No, that's good to know. I'm mildly pleased by that information. That's quite interesting. She needs to understand it. Understanding made her mourning turn to joy. Whereas before she rushed off to tell the disciples, I don't know what's happened, the stone of Jesus is there. Now she rushes off to say, I've seen the Lord. I don't know if you know a surgeon, but I know a couple of surgeons, and it's nice to know, it's interesting to know, that they can perform the operation to remove an appendix. That's an interesting fact. I would like to know how they do it. It's not interesting to know how to do. But if you need your appendix removed, that information kind of changes things, doesn't it? If you need your appendix removed, knowing that there is a surgeon who can remove it, that informs your emotions and your actions. That information changes your whole life. It's not a cold intellectual idea. This is life-changing and life-transforming. Jesus' resurrection means that he has defeated death. And you are going to die. And everyone around you is going to die. I hope that's not news to you. I don't mean necessarily, you know, I'm not planning your death. That's what's going to happen. And Jesus has defeated death. That information has got to change your whole life. It must shape our emotions and our actions. It should start a deep assurance within us. Confident hope. And finally, this is something to tell other people about. Every single one of the stories from that resurrection morning points to the need to share this amazing and baffling news of Jesus' resurrection. This is not something to hide away for a special occasion. It's not something just for Easter Sunday. Yet at the same time, it's something to celebrate visibly and publicly, especially on this annual occasion. But here's the challenge, I think, and it's a challenge for me too. Does the joy and the thankfulness and the serious life-changing implications of the death-defeating resurrection of Jesus flow through our lives? Are our lives being transformed by that news? Do we live in gracious and loving joy because of what he has done, confident that we will not face death because he has risen and he will raise us too? Do we speak the words of that life and use, that Christ has died, that Christ is risen, and that Christ will come again? All I've been doing this morning is trying to encourage us to hold firmly to this truth, that the body that went into the tomb on Friday was the same body risen from the dead on Sunday morning. The resurrection isn't just an abstract idea, it's a concrete historical event. And we need to know it, we need to understand it in our heads and in our hearts and in our very lives, and we need to tell other people. Here is the heart of Easter. Here is the heart of Christian hope. One Sunday morning, a man broke through the power of death, and he was and still is the man Jesus.